Hi everyone! Thank you for joining us once again on Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Theo. Today, we've got Magnus Lindqvist with us to talk about his latest title, The Dare to be Different book. Magnus is a trend spotter and futurologist. He calls his work intellectual acupuncture, aiming to change how we think about the future by provoking us with ideas, enabling new questions, and challenging our worldview. The Dare to be Different book blends interdisciplinary insights from technology, the arts, popular culture, and more in order to unlock the secrets to genuine innovation and creativity. Well, hi Magnus, thank you very much for joining us today on Lit Radio Podcast. It is again a great pleasure to have you with us once again for your latest book, The Dare to be Different book. So first of all, could you tell us why did you decide to write it?
Well, thank you for letting me be a part of Lid Radio. It's the pleasure is all mine. I have for a number of years been asking companies and people and myself the question, do you want to compete or create? And it's what they call in German a Gretchenfrage. It's a way to kind of reveal your inner motives, and the answer might be inconvenient. So I've thought about it, and I know it's influenced some of my other books, but I wanted to write a book firmly about the idea of creation and the raw material for being able to create, no matter what it is, which is being different. And being different as a person can be a source of pride. I mean, if you're a very talented concert pianist or extraordinarily attractive, you can be proud. But for many people, the fact that they are different is a source of maybe shame and pain. And it's a book written for that kind of being different and how you can use that, how you can see that as an asset and as an energy. So the reason I wrote the book is deeply rooted in who I am, what I've been spending my life thinking about, and what I want to shed some light on in the hope that it might inspire and help people.
Absolutely. But could you tell us, why do you think that our uniqueness matters so much?
Well, the thing about uniqueness, we are not particularly unique. I forget the exact figure, it's in the book, but I think genetically, your DNA and my DNA were down to like 0.6% or something. So the reason that you have your hair color and eye color and that you like or dislike coriander differs from mine, it comes down to 0.6. So we are mainly alike, you and I. But like I said, then we have these things that stand out. It can be a way of thinking, a way of being, a sense of who you are, your self-perception, so to speak. It could be something you've experienced. And it's an itch. It's there whether you wanted to or not. You might constantly be reminded of it. You know, whether you walk into a room or when you encounter the world or read about things. So that's, you know, whether we want to or not, our uniqueness is an itch. And instead of just scratching it, maybe we can try to sharpen it and use it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And then in the book, you have 7 dares for the readers to be different and to embrace their uniqueness, whatever their uniqueness is. So now I would like to talk with you briefly about each of those dares that you have in the book, starting with the first one, which is digging deep. So why is that important?
Before I begin, if people wonder why 7 dares, why not 70 or 4 or 3? Because Iron Maiden's best album is Seventh Son of a Seventh Son. That's why. So the first dare to dig deep. It comes from this sense that we have almost marginalized difference into a cliche we call diversity. And normally when we talk about diversity, it's skin deep, it's gender, it's ethnicity, it's background. And I think while those things can matter, I think our most interesting points of differentiation lie much deeper down. So I use the metaphor of the soul as a mine shaft, which we dig in. And the further down we deep, I'm not going to go all Freudian and talk about the subconscious, but you know, the more you look at whom you have been, what you do, the more you travel, read, the deeper you dig, the more interesting your answers will be. Because frankly, it's not really interesting what your gender, skin color, or age is. Now, I know that sounds like a middle-aged white cis man speaking, which I'm guilty of, but I also think that the whole identity political game has closed down a much more interesting conversation about differences and diversity. That's why the chapter is called Dare to Dig Deep. Dare, because who knows what you might find in the darkness of your soul's mineshaft.
Yeah, again, I find this part of the book very interesting, because you're right, you can never know what you will find once you start digging deep. Yeah, it's a very interesting space to explore. And then you talk about being an outsider. That's again very interesting part of the book, because you say that being invited to parties is nice and all, but being different is about the benefits of distancing yourself from the crowd. And we humans, it's in our DNA to be among other people. So being an outsider is not that easy. But why is it important?
Well, let me quote the movie line that's in the chapter, or the TV series line from Billions, a TV series about a self-made hedge fund billionaire and his battle against the judicial system in New York. And it's full of like heroes and anti-heroes. It's quite modern. And in this series, Axe, Bobby Axelrod, he's the self-made billionaire, he's kind of brash, comes from the streets, now he's very rich, but like played by Damian Lewis, very kind of shooting from the hip, likable, if not all moral character. He hires a brilliant non-binary individual whose name is Taylor. I think it's in season two or something. And Taylor is a mathematical wisp person and so on. And Taylor shares feeling that they have been burdened with, that they always feel that they're on the outside looking in, as if there is a glass wall between them and the world. And I think that's what being an outsider is for many of us. We're locked out. We're not invited to the party. We're not in the inner circle. We're on the outer sphere. But Bobby Axelrod says, well, you know that lens, or sorry, that wall, it's not actually a wall, it's a lens. You see things differently. It's an asset. It's a strength. So that's what I want to get at this. Being different is about being an outsider. And you know, that can be both shameful and horrible and bad and isolating and lonely. But it always gives you a perspective, which is different. So it's about honing and polishing the lens of being different, which comes from being an outsider, not about necessarily enjoying the fact that you are uninvited.
Yeah, that's fascinating how you're switching the perspective of being an outsider. And I would encourage people to read more in the book, because as I said, it's a very interesting part. But next, you talk about embracing suffering, which, being honest, that's easier said than done, because no one likes to suffer. And I know you have a whole another book about Christ overcoming them. But how can we embrace suffering?
By accepting it as an integral part of life. I mean, the word in itself and all that's associated with it, pain and so on this are dislikable. There are things we are primed as human beings to avoid. I mean, if a god asked us how to design a good life, I don't think we would put suffering as part of that ingredient list. But there is value in suffering. Watching a horror movie, taking a very hot sauna, and eating spicy food are quite evident examples of willful suffering for enjoyment. But more philosophically, and in the scope of this book, being an outsider, daring to dig deep, all of these things are bound to have very unpleasant feelings to come along with them. And they may take a long time, a sense of desolation, of solitude and loneliness, a sense of not fitting in. And also, while you're practicing whatever it is you're going to do in life, you're not going to be good at it. You will fail. You will be a loser. You will be an amateur. And that's again a source of suffering. But on the other end of that, through the suffering comes tremendous strength. And not about you being strong necessarily, but about things like empathy, understanding, seeing things differently. But in the context of this book, I also want to see the reader. If you are different, you will have suffered and you will suffer. And that's part of the price of accepting the fact that you are unlike any other.
Yeah, as you were talking, a thought just came to my mind, which I've seen on social media and on different platforms. So you can't be really good at what you're doing unless you dare to be a beginner, and I guess that's also suffering for some people. I mean, the beginning
Yeah,
is
I mean,
pretty difficult.
we throw many words around ourselves, like beginner, amateur, so on, and we forget the pain associated with that. I think the original chapter title was Dare to Be in Pain, but it was a little bit unclear what exactly I meant. And in pain is actually more severe. Suffering, you can suffer from just chronic boredom. And if you think about, imagine that you are a deviant. You could have a deviating sexuality or, a talent which is different from anybody else's. If you are then born in a very kind of conservative small town where people don't like deviating sexualities or have no place for your talent, you are going to suffer. And I know shortly we will talk about another chapter about moving, but I want to see the reader in this. Because there are so many shades of being different, and suffering is part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and before we speak about moving, I would like to jump to the fourth there, which is to say very challenging in today's world, and that is being kind. So why do you think it is so difficult to be nice nowadays? And then why is it so vital, for our uniqueness?
Well, you use the word nice here, which I think is a common mistake. Being nice is not hard, but being nice is often being dishonest, being polite, it's not part of being kind. It's a different thing. Being kind. What is kindness? There's bumper sticker kindness, there's LinkedIn kindness, which is all about, helping others out, being nice to people. So, but that's not what I'm talking about. How do you rise above the present? How do you see what should be happening in the world? Or how do you see the future before everybody else? So I use in this chapter a book about Franz Jägerstätter. And for the movie buffs, you will recognize his name from the movie A Hidden Life. It was an Austrian farmer living high up in the Alps, very simple kind of Austrian farmer's life in the 1930s. And then the Nazis invaded. Or they had the Anschluss. So a lot of Austrians were called up to serve in the German army, in the Bundeswehr. And Franz Jägerstätter refused because he saw what the Nazis were and stood for. So you could argue that he was disloyal. You could argue that he was inconvenient. You could argue that going against what everybody else thought in his village, and many people in his village sympathized with the Nazis, felt that they were a force for good, similar to some of the politics in the world right now. Oh, but they are a breath of fresh air. At least they get things done. So his refusal lands him in prison and he gets executed. He is now considered one of the patron saints of the Catholic Church. I use that as quite a controversial example of kindness, because I believe that kindness has to be difficult. There was a great book written by a Danish science journalist, Tor Nørre Treanders, and it's about the generous human being. And he starts the whole book by talking about a peacock, the bird, the fowl. And he talks about the peacock's tail, which really should not exist. You and I learn about the survival of the fittest. You know, if you are adaptable and you fit in, you survive. The peacock, it cannot fly. It's not used to fight predators. It's only sort of there to mate. And the bigger, the more impractical the peacock's tail is, the better they do. Because carrying a huge tail is difficult, which creates attractiveness. And being kind, and in Tor Nørre Treanders' book, being generous, these are difficult acts. There are so many things vying for our attention now: competition, sharp elbows. There are also a lot of things we are certain of. I know that this is good. I know that this is bad. So we live in a kind of conviction, or sorry, what I call the convenience of conviction. We want to be certain of things. And Franz Jägerstätter and the long-term definition of kindness forces us to rise above, think further, and redefine perhaps what kindness is from kind of bumper sticker kindness into something else. And I am, it's a different chapter in a book about being different. But there are so many books called there about be different that are only about success, that are only about, if you make money, you will have succeeded. And I wanted to add, well, actually you can use your point of differentiation. You can think about it in terms of a long-term force for good rather than short-term success.
Yeah.
And I should add, sorry to interrupt you, Thea. I should add, we've just talked about being an outsider. I think every single villager in Franz Jägerstätter's village thought he was an asshole. Why do you oppose these things? Why do you go against the tide? Why are you being so difficult?
Yeah, absolutely. And I found this definition of kindness very unique and interesting. Again, something I don't think we've heard of before. So thanks for sharing your insights on that. And now I'll go back to the fifth there, which is to move, whether away or towards something, or simply shifting things around to gain a different perspective. So I think we've touched a little bit on that already, but why do you think it is so vital to move?
I think Einstein once said that the reason we have time is so that everything doesn't happen at the same time. The reason you have forward, past, future, hours, so on, is that everything shouldn't just happen now. It's spread out. And something similar can be said about place. The reason we have distances is that not everything will happen in the same place. So again, imagine that you have a trait. You might be exceptionally tall or short, or you might be very bad at maths but good at dancing, or you might have a way of being which people around you just consider to be difficult. Trust me when I say there are places, cities, countries, jobs, somewhere in the world where you will be celebrated, not just tolerated. We use the word tolerance too often, and I think tolerance is a little bit more like, No, celebrated. You're needed somewhere. But you will have to move. You will have to pack your bags and go elsewhere. either physically and actually preferably physically, move away, travel, go elsewhere, learn about yourself, not least, but maybe also mentally refocus. So one of the examples I use here is an electronic pop duo from England called OMD, Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark. They're from the UK. I couldn't actually say if they're from England, but from the UK. And they had some modest chart success in the 80s, early 90s, but like all pop stars, their fortunes wane, right? You have a best before date. And now by the mid-90s, they're sort of two middle-aged gentlemen, not particularly attractive as a kind of pop duo anymore. And then the last time they're invited to Top of the Pops, a TV show, to perform a hit, it's the first performance at the same show by a band called the Spice Girls. So it's an end of one era and the beginning of the next. And they look at that and they kind of see the future. They're like, okay, it's not about middle-aged gits anymore. It's about girl bands and girl groups and girl power. So they tried to write hits for the Spice Girls and others. No, there are no takers. There are no interest because everybody wants to work with the Spice Girls. So they actually audition a band themselves and create it. And they wanted to call it the Automatic Cats. But one of the mothers of the singers in the band kept mispronouncing it, not automatic, but atomic. So they named it Atomic Kitten. And OMD's chart, their only number one hit, came with the song Whole Again by Atomic Kitten in, I think, 1996 or 97. And that's moving as well, right? It's reframing how you do your work. It's rethinking. It's, selling old wine in new bottles or finding new channels for whatever it is you think you're good at. The beauty of the world today is it's easier to move. It's cheaper to move. We can move digitally, but we can also access more worlds. You're not a slave to geography the same way. We can look into what, teenage culture is like in Japan instantly today, or we can see what the weather is like in California right now. So there is a way to tap into other places easier. But I'll still say it's a dare. It's a dare to move, to emphasize and embrace your differences.
Yeah, it's absolutely a dare, but I do agree, changing perspective is really helpful in many situations. And now I'll move to the sixth dare, which I find quite intriguing just because I'm in my mid-20s. So the dare is to be 20 something. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah. Congratulations. It's a very, very unique and special time in a person's life. And I think this is the chapter which inspired me to write the book as well. You see, children, we have learned, toddlers and young children, they should be nourished and protected. Go to school, learn, be encouraged, dress out as whatever you want to dress out as, etc. We've learned this. Childhood, we have a very clear sense of today. Teenagers, too. I mean, teenagers are a relatively new invention. We invented them somewhere in the 1950s. But now we know in a teenager, you should experiment within reason and perhaps not do things that you will regret in the long run. So don't do every kind of drug and don't get pregnant, that kind of thing. Then people go to university and then we kind of ignore them. Okay, I guess you're an adult. You're 24. You've done your education. Congratulations. And then I realized that every person I've ever met that has been very successful, and it doesn't matter if you think money, fame, self-realization, it doesn't matter how you define success, but every single one I met was like that. It was in their 20s that they had taken uncomfortable risks, or asked special kinds of questions, or bounced into a person who would change their life, or accidentally read something, a thought that influenced them. So it's a kind of third age of adolescence, children, teenagers, and the 20-something. And I wanted this chapter to be about that time of life where your brain is actually not fully baked. I think I'm not a neuroscientist, but I think it's somewhere around 25, 26 that your brain is sort of adult. So it's a time of experimentation and risk taking. It's a time of bewilderment and disillusioned. Originally, we used to copy our parents, right? And if, I mean, my parents were born in the 40s, they met when they were 17, got married at age 21, had children before 25. Very few people do like that today. But that also means we are even more lost. What should I be, become? Where should I live? Whom should I marry? And I want people to accept that and to use that time of life. And I use Lena Dunham as an example, the showrunner for the TV show Girls. You know, she created that show in her mid-20s simply for acknowledging it, this kind of third age of adolescence. There is a time where you're not yet an adult. You don't have steady relationships and steady jobs, but neither are you a teenager anymore. So it's an in-between time of life. And her pitch for doing that show, you can read about it in the book, was also very different. Usually you write a script and a treatment and a pilot, and she just wrote, here are the kinds of characters I'd like to write about. And today, I mean, it was about 10 years ago now, but Girls still have this kind of cult status in the world of premium TV, at least the first season does. So that's what I mean by daring to embracing your 20-something years, which can last longer. I think mine lasted well into my 30s.
Yeah, they absolutely can. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, being in your 20s is so confusing. You're an adult, but you still don't know what's going on exactly in your life. So yeah, I think it's a great dare to embrace that time and to dare to even make mistakes and take risks. So yeah, again, I think a great part of the book. And then the final dare is to get older. So how do we do that?
Yeah. Well, getting older, I think, happens automagically, whether we want it to or not. Old and older have, in our youth worshipping culture, become quite negative, right? A lot of our culture is now based upon staying young longer, right? Look better naked longer, go to the gym, lose weight, dye your hair, do implants, and so on. But I wanted in this chapter to talk about actually that some of our best features and some of our best skills and our wisdom emerges as we grow older. So I start the chapter with the famous anecdote about Dietrich Mateschitz, who founded Red Bull in his 40s. And we think now that being an entrepreneur, fail fast, Mark Zuckerberg, so on, Silicon Valley, you know, you should not be older than 27, maybe 31. But actually, some of the best startups, some of the best entrepreneurship happens much later. And I use examples ranging from Kentucky Fried Chicken to The Body Shop and many other famous case studies to show. And I also think a little bit about, you know, what is it that happens as we get older? And I differentiate between fluid intelligence, quick-witted, I'm tuned into trance, you're fast thinking, and crystallized intelligence, wisdom, slow decision-making. You've seen things before. You might not get that excited, which enables you to have much more clarity in your judgment. So dare to get older. I know it's an oxymoron. It's going to happen whether we want it to or not. But lean into it. Use it. Your best years might actually happen after your 50s. Since I wrote the book, I saw that the UK has a statistic of happiness. It's the office of statistical research, so the state-owned statistics supplier. And they do happiness over your age. And they saw that most people are quite happy in their 20s. Not all. Teens, sorry, I should say. Teens. Not all, of course, but generally, then in your 20s, it goes down. And we already talked about the difficulty of being a 20-something, but it keeps falling. And you actually get to your lowest point somewhere between your late 40s and early 50s. And then your happiness magically bounces up. From age 55 until age 80 plus, you're the happiest you've ever been. It surpasses even your teenage years. So if you're watching this or listening to this and you're struggling, it might just be because you haven't yet passed 55 years of age. And then we can only say, in the words of Irish singer Dermot Kennedy, better days are coming.
Amazing. Yeah, well, I think that's great to hear. And finally, Magnus, I have one last question to conclude this very insightful conversation. So would you give our listeners your three quick tips on what they should do if they decide to explore their uniqueness? What do you think should be the first three steps that they should take right now?
Okay, off the cuff. Number one, accept. Before anything else, accept. You are different. I might be shameful and guilty. And don't think of it as a kind of success tool. Just accept it. That weird thought inside of you, or your deviation, or the fact that people have bullied you, whatever it might be, just accept it. First of all, don't have to like it. Don't have to enjoy it. Just accept it. Number two, find other islands. You know, no person is an island. Find other islands in this stream. Read, reach out, connect. Somewhere there are people probably not like you. You are different, you are unique, but they might help you. They might be stepping stones into another world, or you for them. So find other islands. And number three, take a very long-term perspective. We live in a now culture. Instant social media, likes, clicks, whatever it may be. We live in a world of like news headlines about doom, gloom, war, conflict, climate change. Take a long-term view, including of yourself. You won't accomplish much in a year or two. But in the long term, especially if you kind of accept and use your source of uniqueness, magic will ensue. Not all of it enjoyable, but still. So those would be my three tips.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time speaking with me today. It was a very interesting and insightful conversation for me, and I hope for our listeners, and I would encourage them to get a copy of the Dare to Be Different book to explore even further your dares. But thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.